Several months ago, we interviewed Dr. Mona Hanna Atisha, internationally and affectionately known as Dr. Mona. Her resilience and courage were instrumental in bringing the Flint water crisis to light, especially as the lead in drinking water affected the kids, the children. She is an assistant professor of pediatrics in the MSU College of Human Medicine and director of the pediatric residency program at Hurley Children's Hospital in Flint. And it's a distinct pleasure to welcome her back to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Dr. Mona, let's get right to something near and dear to your heart. How are the kids in Flint doing since we last talked?
Well, you know, I have the honor of seeing our Flint kids almost every day in clinic, and they're amazing. They are smart. They are strong. They are bright. They are resilient, and they're brave. So, you know, they appear to be doing okay, but time will tell. You know, we just received some funding from the state, and we're hoping to receive some funding from the federal government to build this large-scale registry, to identify the children, to track them, and to really evaluate how they are doing, not just kind of on a one-on-one basis, but really at a population health level. How are they doing? What are the impacts that we're seeing? But what we hope to show from this registry is not the impact of this water crisis. Not, hey, you know, this is what lead causes. It causes problems with cognition and behavior, and we're seeing this and this and this. But we really hope to show how we turned the story around, how we were able to provide these kids with a nutrient-rich environment, with robust early education, literacy support, school health support, nutrition support, healthcare support, which is exactly what we're trying to do right now in Flint, and how doing that proactively mitigated the impact of this crisis. So that's the kind of research that we want to share in a few years to come.
Now, you mentioned that holistic mitigation approach that you folks are doing, certainly it gets well beyond how much lead it happens to be in a blood sample type of a thing. But in terms of the funding that you mentioned, a lot of funding has gone in, but I suspect that there's need for funding for months and years to come.
Absolutely. So, you know, we've been able to do some amazing things in Flint. We have things like universal early intervention. We have universal preschool. We have a mobile grocery store. We have Medicaid expansion, literacy programs. These are amazing, amazing things that all kids need, but especially our Flint kids. But they're all time limited in terms of the support. The support comes from state, federal, and philanthropic dollars, and everything is largely supported for maybe 2 or 3 years. This is not a 2 or 3 year problem. This is something we need to be investing in for years, if not decades to come. And we do not have that long-term support to not only make sure that our kids recover, but thrive.
You mentioned a couple of programs that I personally am interested in as well. You've mentioned literacy a couple of times. Now, talk a little bit about, we'll take some specifics on one or two of these initiatives. What are we doing exactly, or what are you doing in Flint with respect to early childhood literacy?
Absolutely. And this is probably one of my favorite projects. So we know that kids in low-income neighborhoods have a word gap. By 3 years of age, low-income inner-city children have heard 30 million less words than children in, say, a middle-income neighborhood. There is about one book for every 300 kids in low-income communities. So by really 9 months, by 18 months, we already see evidence of those achievement gaps. And by kindergarten, it's almost too late to remedy, to bridge that achievement gap. So we need to act sooner. And we also know that reading and literacy promotes brain development. It's a great, you know, it's also a necessary ingredient to remedy, you know, this water crisis with the lead exposure. So, you know, Flint's a small, big city, so everybody who cares about early literacy, we got around a table from our preschool, our library, our literacy network, the medical center, and we all are now under the banner of something called Flint Kids Read, and it kind of started with a grant I received from the Aspen Institute, a $25,000 grant to do home delivery of books. That's exploded. So now in Flint, every single kid gets a book delivered to them every month from the age of 0 to 5. It's a program called Imagine Nation Library. We are investing in 2-generation literacy, so to support families, to support parents who may have literacy issues. We have pop-up preschools, so actually mobile units that are going around the community to expose families who may not be exposed to what preschool can do. And I mentioned the universal preschool and early childhood services. In our clinic, we have something called Reach Out and Read, which is an evidence-based early literacy program that puts books into the hands of of kids starting at birth, and then, you know, encourages families to read with their children. And through the support of the NBA Players Association, who have been amazing, we are now investing in newborn literacy. So right when a baby is born, we go in and we talk to families about the importance of reading with their children. So we are taking this really kind of community-wide approach, investing in early literacy to promote our children's education and their success.
We're talking about how the Flint kids are doing in the wake of the Flint water crisis with Dr. Mona Hannah Atisha. Let's move to another area that I know, and you mentioned it earlier, and it's also near and dear, given all my years in the College of Agriculture and Natural Resources, but nutrition.
Mm-hmm. So nutrition is terribly important in this water crisis. It was important in the in terms of how we were hit by this crisis, and it's important for really decades to come. So when a child has poor nutrition, if they have an empty stomach or they're deficient in certain nutrients, they absorb lead more readily into their body. Also, if there's low breastfeeding rates, they absorb lead more readily. And we have low breastfeeding rates in Flint, like in many inner cities. Many of our moms were using this water mixed with powdered formula, and that impacts the most developmentally vulnerable age group. So nutrition plays a critical role in why this crisis was so damaging, but also nutrition plays an even more critical role in terms of the mitigation. We need great nutrition for brain development. That's a no-brainer. So we need great nutrition, but also lead. You know, it lasts in your blood for a short period, but eventually it gets stored in your bones and really for decades. And in periods of, for example, poor nutrition or stress or pregnancy, it can come back out of your bones, back into your bloodstream, and cause that neurotoxicity all over again. So that's why nutrition plays a really incredible role to prevent the long-term consequences of the lead exposure. So Flint, as you know, has very limited nutrition access. We have no full-service grocery stores. We need kids to have ready access to great food so that their brains can grow and that they can develop and that we don't see the consequences.
Dr. Mona, you recently were the guest of Representative Dan Kildee when President Trump made his first address to the joint congressional body. And you had some reactions to what you heard and what you didn't hear. Reactions to what you heard specifically and concerns or hopes moving forward as the Trump administration gets underway.
Sure. So it was an absolute honor to be in Congress to listen to the first address by President Trump. It was an honor to be a guest of Congressman Kildee, who's been an absolute fighter for Flint. And it was quite a surreal experience to be in that room, which is really actually quite a small room. And you see the Supreme Court justices and you see the senators and you see the First Lady. Listening to President Trump, it was great to hear, for example, his investment in infrastructure. Because largely that was a huge problem in Flint. His tone was civil and almost presidential. But I would have liked to have heard more about investments in human infrastructure, investments in our vulnerable populations, more messaging on tolerance. His message did not seem very different from his previous messages, but definitely the tone seemed to be quite different.
Well, we're going to follow this, of course. I know that you've got a lot of work to do ahead of you. But what are the next couple or two or three major initiatives that you and your team will be working on?
Yeah, so really our work in Flint is just beginning. We're just beginning a lot of these programs and the assessment of these programs. And I think that what's in our near future is definitely building this registry that I talked about. This is a huge endeavor, and we're modeling it after other national registries like the World Trade Center Registry, which is on its 15th year. So we really want to build this aspirational state-of-the-art registry to support families, to get them connected to all these great resources, to identify them and to track them and evaluate them for decades to come. So that is probably the biggest thing that we have going on right now.
Well, Dr. Mona, this is our second interview. It's been a pleasure indeed. I've been talking with Dr. Mona Hannah Atisha. She is an assistant professor of pediatrics in the MSU College of Human Medicine and director of the pediatric residency program at Hurley Children's Hospital in Flint. And also congratulations again on all the great work that you're doing and your team is doing in Flint. Keep up the good fight, because nothing can be more important.
Absolutely. Thank you. It's great to be here.